There's all kinds of things that come to mind in the morning to start with. I had six or eight of those different things that I was choosing from when Wayne and Shirley walked into the room. And I want to add my welcome to them. This is a long time coming, and you are so welcome I can hardly express it. In the first service this morning, many of you were present. We sang Amazing Grace. A few years ago, I heard some verses that not many people know. So this morning, while we were in the sanctuary, I wrote some of those down because I thought you might want to know them. Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound. You know this one that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see. Here's one you haven't heard much. The Lord has promised good to me. His word my hope secures. He will my shield and portion be as long as life endures. Or this one. The earth will soon dissolve like snow, the sun forbear to shine. But he who called me here below will be forever mine. Don't think I can read the third one. We'll save it for another day. Some of you are in the choir. And if you're in the choir, you find that Paul Honaker, like many choir directors, has an unusual conduct in teaching you about songs. And I think I've watched this behavior in when I was in college. I watched this behavior when I was in church choirs in high school and even before that. And I think choral directors do this for positive psychological reasons. But they will very often start their rehearsal with the end of the song. Have you noticed that? Those of you who've sung in choirs, they'll say, let's turn to page 7. And you'll work on page 7, and that's the last page. And then they'll say, okay, now let's work on page 6. And you'll do that and come into page 7. And by the time you get finished with this, as long as you can start okay, the rest of it is just more and more and more and more familiar as you go in, right? Anybody got an idea where I'm going with this?
No, but I know why they do.
I want someday to talk with you about the Sermon on the Mount, but it's just a little bit too much to chew at one time. And so I want to start today with Matthew 7. And we'll leave Matthew 6 and Matthew 5 for another day. Matthew 5, 6, and 7 is Matthew's recording of the Sermon on the Mount. Pieces of that are found in many places in Luke and Mark. But in Matthew, it's all gathered together here. And if you take a look at how Matthew 7 starts, you're tempted to think that Matthew 7 is a continuation of something that starts in Matthew 6, along about verse 19. You'll take a look at verse 19 in Matthew 6. You'll see it says, do not store up treasures for yourselves on earth. I'm learning something. And I'm going to stop for a minute and tell you about it. I did it just a moment ago. I don't know if you picked up on it. The students at the University of Richmond take a course that's called CORE. Every student who enters the University of Richmond, whether a transfer student or a freshman, is required to take this course. It's a year-long course, and they study literature of one kind or another. They study literature that refers to history. They study literature that refers to psychology, and they study other things. One of the things they've been studying for several years now is the book of Genesis. And they have a translation of Genesis prepared by a professor at the University of California at Berkeley. And your cynicism is misplaced. It is a magnificent translation. And about half of each page is translation, and about half of each page is footnote commentary on the translation. And one of the things you find is that if you translate this thing more closely, which I think this guy has done, there's a whole lot of ands. This happened, and this happened, and this happened, and this happened, and this happened. And the second thing there is there's a whole lot of breaks. You're reading along, and you read something, and you stop. And then you start up again, and you stop, and you start up again, and you stop, and you suddenly realize you heard something that you wouldn't have heard if you just read it straight through. Abraham hears the voice of God. And God says, Abraham, actually he says Abram because his name was Abraham by that point. Abram, I want you to take your son, your only son, Isaac, whom you love, and sacrifice him to me. If you let those words run together, you don't hear the same thing as if you break them up. And this translator from the University of California at Berkeley has done that over and over through that book. And I'm starting to realize it happens other places. Did you hear the line I read out of that verse? The earth will soon dissolve like snow, the sun forbear to shine. But he who called me here below will be forever mine. Comes out very differently than if you just run it straight through. So let's read this one that way. I won't do this much, but when I do it, maybe from now on you'll know why I'm doing it. Do not store up treasures for yourselves here on earth. Do not store up treasures for yourselves here on earth. You start to realize what might be allowed under this particular prohibition is the storing up of treasures for someone else, or the storing up of treasures somewhere else. And that begins to fit with other things that Scripture has to say. If you move over to verse 25, still in Matthew 6, you see a second one of these, do not do something. What's this one? Do not worry. Do not be anxious, one particularly good translation says. What are you not supposed to worry about? Don't worry about your life or what you're going to eat. Or your body. What you're going to wear. And then you come to chapter 7, verse 1, and what do you see? Don't judge. And you come to verse 6. My wife teaches kindergarten. And sometimes in kindergarten, I understand. I don't, of course, attend every day. I did that for 4 days, and that was enough. That's a true story, actually. I made it through almost a week before the teacher came to the principal, and the teacher and the principal came to my house, and basically the message was, get him out of here. That's a true story. My artistic ability suffered because I didn't learn to do the kinds of things that kindergarten students might learn. But I understand that my wife sometimes will do this little game. One of these things is not like the other. One of these things doesn't belong. Have you heard that little thing? Which one of these sounded a little bit odd? That last one. Right? You know, don't store up treasures for yourselves on earth. Don't worry about what you're gonna, about your life, what you're going to eat, about your body, what you're going to wear. Don't judge. Don't give dogs what is holy. It just doesn't seem to fit, right? Well, let me back you up and try to show you what I think is happening. I think there is a continuation across these four things. But I think the last two stand alone. And the last two are bracketing something. One of the things that we try to do with our students at the University of Richmond while they're studying chemistry is give them a sense of statistics. A statistician once went out duck hunting. Have you heard this story? He's leading a duck. He fires. The shotgun pellets go in front of the duck about 2 feet. He's got another barrel. He pulls the barrel. The shotgun pellets go behind the duck about 2 feet. He turns to his companion and says, on average, that duck is dead. That's bracketing. That's bracketing. And what's happening in the front of Matthew 7 is something is being bracketed. And the way that second one is worded, and I suspect it was worded in such a way that Jesus was appealing to the passions of the people, but saying something very important. And there's something stuck in between. I tell my students that the most important, one of the most important things they can think about prior to the study of chemistry is to go get a good book of nursery stories and read the story of Goldilocks. And there probably are half a dozen places in my course where I make them repeat the story of Goldilocks, and then we go look at something, and it's amazing how much chemistry you can understand if you understand that little story. It's amazing how many things you can understand in other places as well. Story of Goldilocks. She goes into the woods. The bears aren't home. She walks into their home, and what does she see? Food. Bowls of porridge. And one bowl is too hot, and one is too cold. But there's one that's right? And the same thing happens to beds, and the same thing happens to chairs, and all this kind of stuff. And the story goes on. Well, it's that, you know, here's something that's too far this way, and here's something that's too far this way, but there's a place in the middle where either something really good is or something very interesting is. In the case of chemistry, it's more often something interesting goes on sort of in the middle. Bracketing kind of does that. What's the first one of these? I want you to get your teeth into this. When it says, do not judge, or you will, and you will not be judged. Some say, do not judge, or you yourself will be judged. Because the judgments you give are the judgments you will get, and the standards you use will be the standards used for you. And isn't it interesting, those of you who are in the 8 o'clock hour, what follows? Isn't it interesting what follows? Why do you observe the splinter in your brother's eye and never notice the great log? I think the pastor this morning used the word plank. Never notice the great log in your own. And how dare you say to your brother, let me take that splinter out of your eye, when look, there's a great log in your own. Hypocrite. Take the log out of your own eye first, and then you'll see clearly enough to take the splinter out of your brother's eye. Don't judge. But what does verse 6 say? Don't give dogs what's holy. Don't put your pearls before swine. I see a hand.
I think that we make a moral judgment on others without judging their soul. And I don't think that these verses mean that we are to support them and never speak. You know, that the other side.
You said something very, very important, and I think directly on target. There is a judging that judges the quality and character of the soul of another person, and that's forbidden. Doesn't mean you can't look at evidence and make conclusions, or at least I don't believe so. Because if you look at the next one, don't give dogs what is holy. One picture of this could be, don't use things that are reserved for sacred purposes to let dogs eat out of. That's one way of thinking about it. But the word dog had another connotation in those days. We've been hearing words in our public discourse over the last little while that tried to think of a word that sounds like it without using the word itself. But it's a repetitive word that has my at the front end and has some things that crows say afterwards. Dogs was a term that Jewish people would use for people who were Gentiles. And swine were about as unclean as you could get. Now, Jesus said both of these things, right? So what's the first one saying? The first one's saying, don't conclude that anyone is worthless or hopeless. And he adds, you have problems enough. And when God has helped you deal with your problems, then in gratitude, you turn around and find somebody else and help them with their problems. Don't just condemn them to whatever situation they're in. But offer help to them as God has helped you. But the second one, verse 6, I think, says, be careful how you treat with people who aren't ready. Not ready to respect and not ready to consider holy things, sacred things, priceless things. And I hear a little Goldilocks in there. Don't go to the point where you condemn everybody and say there's nothing worthwhile. But on the other hand, don't just indiscriminately offer important, sacred, priceless things to people who aren't ready to treat with those, to deal with those. So where's the middle path? Where's the middle path? The middle path is in verse 12. What's the rule that Jesus gives? And he says this is a rule that covers all the law and all the prophets. All the rules the Pharisees might want to write. You're pretty close to summing them up in here. We call this the golden rule, I think. What is it? You treat people the way you'd like people to treat you. Do unto others as you would have others do unto you. So if you're down in a ditch somewhere, do you want people throwing dirt on you to keep you down there? Or do you want people offering you some help? You probably want people offering you some help. But if you're not quite ready to see the priceless things, maybe what you need is help to see that they're priceless before you see the things themselves. Now, this is complicated enough that I'm going to go that far and stop and move to something that I think is more interesting, which is what it says in the rest of this chapter. Because I think in the rest of this chapter, what you're hearing is aspects of, keys to, steps in spiritual maturity. You want to be spiritually mature. Here's some things you ought to be thinking about. Here's some things you ought to be hearing about. And it comes in three parts. The first part is in chapter 7, verse 7 to verse 11. I want to read it first, then I want to come back and talk about it. My translation, you ready? My translation says, ask and it will be given to you, search and you will find, knock and the door will be opened to you. Everyone who asks receives, everyone who searches finds, and everyone who knocks will have the door opened. Is there anyone among you who would hand his son a stone when he asks for bread, or would hand him a snake when he asks for a fish? The answer is clearly no. If you then, evil as you are, know how to give your children what is good, how much more will your Father in heaven give good things to those who ask him?
Now, we're going to turn into an English class for just a minute. Given what you've read, here's three words. Well, that's not going to work. Jock, could you throw that away as we leave the room?
Good catch, sir.
Okay. Ask. Seek. My translation says search. Knock. Anybody have any other words for those three terms? Are there any other words for those three terms? Okay. Now what I want to know is what goes between them. And here are your choices. What goes between them could be or and or. Or it could be and. What's the difference? What happens if you put or in between them? What conclusion has you reached? You see three things that are interchangeable. You need to be doing something, and what you need to be doing could be described by this term, or could be described by this term, or could be described by this term. You need to be doing something, and here's three different ways to think about what that thing is. What if you use the word and? It says you need to do this one. And then there's something different and you need to be doing that. And then there's something different yet, and you need to be doing that. Which one fits? I think it's beautiful that the writer has not told you.
And of course, the writer is quoting the Lord. The Lord hasn't told you. I think if you think back, most people have treated this as if they are synonyms. There's three different ways of describing one kind of thing that you ought to be doing. And I don't think that fits. And one of the reasons I don't think that fits is because I've done research. A little. Here and there, along the way. I'm in the middle of a pretty spectacular moment in my career. I've published more papers in the last 12 months than I've published in any 5-year period in my life. And I'll publish in the next 6 months more papers than I published in the last 12 months. It's a rather remarkable moment right now. We're getting a whole lot done and a whole lot's coming out. Big stuff. I'll show you sometimes stuff that thick by the time you get it all finished. Well, it's about that thick by the time they print it in small print. What do you have to do research? Now, I don't know if any of you know. A couple of you might.
What do you have to do? Question first, you want to answer.
You gotta, first of all, formulate the question. But as you're formulating the question, one thing you want to find out is what's already been said about that. Mm-hmm. You want to find out what's the context in which to understand something I'm going to explore. And if you think that, and if you see a parallel here, you don't have to. I do, but you don't have to. Then this one could become, pray for wisdom before the action. Pray for wisdom before action.
The cliche goes, look before you leap. The cliche goes, measure twice, cut once. What happens if you don't measure twice? You'll cut at least twice. I have done that. I can testify on that.
What does seek or search mean? If this is right. If it's this and not that. If it's this and not that. What does search mean?
That's the action. That's the work. You're examining evidence. You're examining evidence. You're studying the situations you find yourself in. You're studying the situations that people you come in contact with find themselves in. Do you finish the first one and then go do the next one? Not if you're smart. You keep going back and forth and back and forth between these two. You do a little something, you come across something you don't fully understand, you go back and you see if you can't find some context in which to understand what you see. Sometimes there's not a context. Sometimes the context is new. Sometimes people have seen some things like this before. And if you don't know those things, it's going to cause problems with either the conclusion you reach. Okay?
Examine evidence. Study circumstances. So what does knock mean?
Knock implies something. Knock implies a closed door. Now, I suppose if you went to somebody's house and the door was standing open, you might knock on the door anyway as you peer in and say, hello, hello. But it implies a barrier of some kind, an obstacle of some kind.
Well, I see this one as speaking to obstacles. To barriers. And I do not want you to limit those two words.
especially the word barrier. Do not limit those to physical barriers. I think Travis in the morning message gave one of the most important illustrations I have ever heard in my life. To try to put a slight touch of humor to it. I didn't go to my senior prom either, because my family and the church we attended didn't believe in the kinds of things that they did there. Dancing. Yes. Okay. But I was in my church across the late 50s and early 60s. And there were things going on in my town that never got questioned. And Travis said that as clearly this morning as I could hear it, ever hear it said. Are there barriers? You bet there's barriers. Sometimes the barriers are that your mind simply can't imagine that such and such needs even to be examined. And so the question is, what do you do
when you encounter obstacles? What do you do when you encounter barriers you work to overcome? Sometimes the solution is to back up here and act like you're starting all over, get a running start. And sometimes it is looking more closely here.
If you start to see those as three different ways of talking about one thing to do, I don't think it's going to come alive. I don't think it's going to come rich. Now, let me now put that back into context. What did I say I saw in this part of the Bible, in this section? Steps or keys or aspects of spiritual maturity, right? What aspect of spiritual maturity are these three terms addressing? It's going to sound funny to you. It looks a little odd.
But it's spiritual aggressiveness.
Somehow aggressiveness and spiritual don't fit together very well until you look at this list.
This one over here, I think, talks about perseverance. This one talks, I think, about depth. This one talks about preparation.
You've got to be involved in a life that is informed by and illumined by spiritual matters. Sometime or another, you've got to get serious about this. And when you do, you're probably not going to get very far if you sit back and wait for things to happen. Get up and you start doing something. One of the ways our church encourages people to get up and start doing something. We've got the four MMs. Which of the MMs is this one? Member mobilization. What does member mobilization mean? It means getting people up and getting them going to do something in the kingdom. What are the things that the church provides to help people do that? Classes to find spiritual gifts. What are the things you might not only be good at, but you might be energized by being involved in? What else do they offer? Opportunities for service. Have you looked at the messenger today? Try to list how many different opportunities for service are listed in there. There's dozens. People going to the New Northfield community next Saturday to try to work to clean things up. People going up to some of the camps that we take inner city children to through the Baptist work in Virginia. Other kinds of things. Prison ministry schedules will be on there and all kinds of other things. Opportunities for service are listed in there. What else does the church offer? We offer Bible study programs on Sunday morning. I try to do a little bit of that in here for you. We got workshops on Wednesday nights. We got workshops on Sunday night. What was the other big news other than Shirley and Wayne being here, which is so good? What was the other really neat piece of news that you heard? Norman Burns made an announcement on Wednesday night. What was that announcement? Every space that we can think of is being used, and we're trying to be creative on how we can find a little bit more space if we come across something else we could be doing. And what is all of that doing? That's either equipping people here, getting them ready to go, or it's inviting people to come in from outside to begin some of the processes of learning about things like this. A healthy church will have some of these things going on. But at the end of the day, the question is, are people getting up and moving? There was a, I don't know if you went to school at places where they put inspirational words on the wall. Did you do that? They haven't done that at my school in a while, but there was a sign up on the wall for about 8 years. And it, the sign said, and I quote, "Everything comes to the one who waits, comma, everything that is that's left over from the one who hustles." I liked that. Because I think it spoke to a truth we see. We got lots of kids who come to our school who are very, very, very talented academically. And we got some kids who come in with a work ethic. And the ones with the work ethic very often surpass the ones with the academic promise and power, unless the ones with an academic promise and power develop a bit of a work ethic themselves. Now there's two more, and I've got 6 minutes, so that means 3 minutes each. We ought to be okay. Yes, Bob.
I think one misinterpretation of this is asked, and what would be given to you is that people would say, whatever I ask God of, I'll have it.
Yes, I think in the context of this morning,
there's a spiritual dimension that's being explored, and it's in that spiritual dimension.
I mean here. That what, and I think maybe that's what I need to say to conclude this. Did you notice Jesus spent longer explaining what God's picture of this was than on the ask and seek and knock instructions? He said, listen, you know how to give good things to your children when they ask for them. Those children were not asking for bad things. They were asking for bread and fish. And he said, if you were a daddy and your child asked you for bread, you know your child needs bread, you're going to provide that. People need physical nourishment, but they also need spiritual nourishment, spiritual strength. If you ask for those things will come. The encouragement that comes that knowing if we begin this effort, God stands ready to bless that effort. Now the next one is in verse 13 and 14. The verses are very short, and the comment is probably very short, although there are a few places to go that if we have time, we may go to one or two of those. These are, let me give you this one up front, these are the keys to spiritual discipline. These are the keys to spiritual discipline. And Jesus presents this as a paradox. The wide, broad, easy-to-find way leads to confinement and restriction and limitation. And the narrow, hard, difficult to find way leads to freedom. It's a paradox. Foolish people choose the road or the path based on how comfortable the road or the path looks. Wise people choose the road or the path based on what? Where the path leads. Where it takes you. Jesus says, don't be foolish. In fact, a whole bunch of times in here, he says, don't be foolish. Or a whole bunch of times, he says, here's what happens if you are foolish. Here's what happens if you're wise. I don't think we have time for you to go there, but let me just, you write this down if you want to look at it later. I want you to look very briefly at 2 Corinthians chapter 4. And I'm going to just read you a few words out of a few sentences that are in here out of a few verses. Verse 16, 2 Corinthians chapter 4. This is why we do not waver. Verse 18. We aim for what is invisible. We don't aim for visible things. We aim for invisible things. Chapter 5, verse 2, and then repeated in verse 4. In our earthly state, we groan under the burden. Verse 6, and repeated in verse 8. But we're always full of confidence. Verse 7, in between. Guided by faith and not by sight. It's a hard road. And it's narrow and hard to find. But it leads to freedom. Now the last point starts in chapter 5, chapter 7, verse 15. And the points are in the first two verses.
Beware of false prophets who come to you disguised as sheep, but underneath are ravenous wolves. First point, there will be people come to you pretending to be spiritual leaders that ought to be followed, and if you follow them, you're going to be eaten alive. Verse 2, you will be able to tell them by their fruits. And then he comments, can people pick grapes from thorns? Can people pick figs from thistles? In the same way, a sound tree produces good fruit, but a rotten tree produces bad fruit. A sound tree cannot bear bad fruit, nor can a rotten tree bear good fruit. Any tree that does not produce good fruit is cut down and thrown on the fire. I repeat, you will be able to tell them by their fruits. We read last week, I think out of Luke chapter 6, a little section that I want to read again. It's a parallel to this one. If you have Bibles that mark the parallel parts in Luke to Matthew, this will be a parallel part. Verse 43 in chapter 6 of Luke, there is no sound tree that produces rotten fruit, nor again a rotten tree that produces sound fruit. Every tree can be told by its own fruit. People do not pick figs from thorns, nor gather grapes from brambles. And here's how he words it in my translation for verse 45. Good people draw what is good from the store of goodness in their hearts. Bad people draw what is bad from the store of badness in their hearts. For the words of the mouth flow out of what fills the heart. You want to be able to tell false folks? Listen to what they say. But more than that, look at what they do. Now, I'm back in chapter 7 of Matthew. I hope you are too. Because it is not an accident what the next verse says. We're almost done. It is not anyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, who will enter the kingdom of heaven, but the person who does the will of my Father in heaven. Matthew 12:50 says almost the same thing. Whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is kin to me. Luke 46, the very next verse of the ones that we just read. Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and not do what I say? Now, the twist that I want you to see is in the last few verses here. Verse 24, therefore, everyone who listens to these words of mine and acts on them will be like a sensible man who built his house on rock. Skip down to verse 26. Everyone who listens to these words of mine and does not act on them will be like a stupid man who built his house on sand. And what happens to houses built on rock and sand when winds and rain and storms come is described. Listen carefully. Whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is kin to me. The one who listens and acts on them is wise. The one who listens to my words and does not act on them is foolish. It is not obey versus disobey. Did you catch that? It's obey versus ignore. It doesn't come out as the wise person obeys and the foolish person disobeys. It is the wise person pays attention and acts. And the foolish person may pay some attention, but no actions follow. Ask, seek, knock. The wise person is hearing words and hungry for more and looking for guidance as the wise person takes actions. The foolish person never takes actions, and the foolish person is left out. And when this heart and flesh shall fail, and mortal life shall cease, I will possess within the veil a life of joy and peace. Why? Because I started it here. Practice makes perfect in a very different sense than you've ever thought about those words before. That's a good place to end. Let's have a word of prayer. Our Father, we thank you for this morning. We thank you for the section of Scripture we have looked at. And most of all today, I pray that you would teach us to ask the right things, seek the right things, knock on the right doors, and trust you for wisdom and guidance to those places. teach us how to hear your words and begin to take action. Keep us from hearing your words and doing nothing. All this we pray in your Son's name. Amen.